You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we have officially entered wedding season. Fucking fuck that. Joining me this trip via Skype from right down the road in Los Angeles right now because he was attending a wedding, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, I am not sorry. I am not a ball of positivity for your upcoming wedding. Deal with it.
Just invited.
Damn it.
That's it.
That's two for two.
Not
this
going.
Season.
Fuck. Two for two.
If I lose three in a row, I'll turn into the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Zing! Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. That's it. Go right to Orange County Jail, where you live, where everything closes at 10 o'clock, like an actual jail.
But we have Disneyland where I live, so fuck you.
Oh, boy. We've got all the money and power where I live, so literally fuck you over.
Respect
bastard.
His mind or die from lead shower.
That's right.
Also joining us via Skype from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, the audience doesn't know that was the second take of the intro, and you told me to be more passive aggressive. How did I do?
You did great. You were just the right amount of passive aggressive. You weren't like openly aggressive with the tone. You weren't, you know, subduing yourself too much. It was just the right amount of, you know, of envy and hatred. So good.
I'm glad I have the right amount of envy and hatred. And since we're talking about Daniel's wedding, I want to counsel you on air for a moment here.
Oh, James. I feel like this is a James. Oh.
Gonna put me on the couch here.
No, it's not you, Daniel. You're too far gone. You're already planning the wedding and everything. We've lost you already.
Alright.
James, we met your girlfriend today, and there was discussion, and she mentioned multiple times wanting to go to Daniel's wedding. And you seem resistant to that idea. I just want to tell you, that's a bad idea to resist that idea.
Really? Why is that? Yeah, Daniel, you literally like gave me the eye and you're like, she's going to the wedding or something. Like I wasn't quite sure what that meant. Clearly, I mean, I am a little socially retarded. Like, am I missing something here? That's
yes.
Like completely
this
obvious.
This is what you are missing. She clearly wants to go to the wedding. Girls like going to weddings, especially with their boyfriends. And your option, if she doesn't go to the wedding, is to bring a friend who lives in Austin to the wedding as your quote-unquote friendly date, but here's the twist, midsiders out there. His friend who lives in Austin, where the wedding is taking place, is an ex-girlfriend. So to recap, your girlfriend wants to go to the wedding with you, but you would rather her go to some other event with you and instead go to Daniel's wedding with an ex-girlfriend.
All right, yeah, I'm pretty retarded.
Plus, we both really liked hanging out with her, so we kind of wanted to be there.
All right.
Yeah, could you send her and then you go to the other thing? Maybe she could come with your ex-girlfriend. Yeah.
I vote for that. That could be fun.
Oh, my God.
That was a good time, though. Thank you, James, for introducing us.
Yeah.
She had a good time. She had a good time, too. Oh yeah, she's right behind me trying to sleep right now. I'm probably failing because of how loud I am.
I fucking sleep during our podcast. What the fuck is this? I don't like her anymore. Now she can't come.
Excommunicated. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Daniel, she really enjoyed your suave, your charm and your grace. And Justin, she really enjoyed your passive aggressiveness. So.
Now I gotta know. Did she really say I was passive aggressive?
basically.
I think her exact words were, you're aggressive, so.
Yeah, actually, I've been saying passive aggressive this entire time, but no, you're just openly aggressive.
What the fuck? I am now gonna make your girlfriend fall in love with me, alright? This is my new goal.
Alright, very well, Dr. Ferris. That's more of a Peter Keating thing, actually, not so much of a Floyd Ferris.
We got your point.
Yeah, you fucking nerd. Right, do we want
objectivism's
to do the news
funny.
Here?
That's your point. What?
Do we want to do the news?
We already did the news of my, entire life. So we might as well do the news of the world,
yeah,
too.
We want to do the show. We want to do the news of the world.
That was passive aggressive. We got to distinguish that from Justin, who's openly aggressive.
Wait, what was Justin passive aggressive?
My comment right there.
I just took that as a normal comment. Like, I was just like, oh, James had an opinion. I don't know.
You're so steeped in aggression that you have idea whether it's active or passive.
Pent up, repressed anger on the midside.
What the fuck? Like, Jesus, God, I'm just going to play this for my therapist.
There isn't
episode.
Enough therapy in the world.
All right, well, let's give therapy to the world. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. 'Cause, kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do.
Check your privilege, ladies, at least according to the caption on this photo of a mother reading to her child, because a professor at the University of Warwick in England says parents who read to their kids should be thinking about how they're, quote, unfairly disadvantaging other people's children by doing so. In an interview with ABC Radio last week, philosopher and professor Adam Swift, not Adam Smith or Jonathan Swift, but Adam Swift, said that, quote, since bedtime story activities do indeed foster and produce desired familial relationship goods. Did you get that compound nominal, desired familial relationship goods?
Where do the
I'm just
the
imagining
come
like,
from?
Yeah, I'm just imagining the parents like putting big crates of tea on top of, here's some goods. Here's some tea straight from the, the East India Company. Here's some goods. For some reason, I'm thinking of the East India Company. I don't know why.
The number one export of bedtime stories is kumquats. I bet you didn't know that. So, they do indeed produce desired familiar relationships, so he wouldn't want to ban them. But that
okay, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for your generosity, sir.
But that, quote, parents who engage in bedtime stories activity should definitely at least feel kind of bad about it sometimes. He says, I don't think parents reading their children bedtime stories should constantly have on their minds the way that they are unfairly disadvantaging other people's children, but I think they should have that thought occasionally. Like 1 in 6 times? 1 in 17 times? Like, how many are we talking here? I need numbers.
Well, okay, it sounds like the professor was actually being somewhat clear about what he meant here. He's trying to say, I want you to be aware of the fact that being a good parent disadvantages other, like they're not to the point where they want to ban this yet because they know that's too much to hope for at this point, but they want to at least inject the guilt in that will eventually lead to a ban.
Yes, this is what we call in the political sphere floating a trial balloon.
Yeah, right.
To see how well this goes over, because he goes on for instance, saying that there are some things that cannot be justified, for instance, like sending your kids to an elite private school. Quote, private schooling cannot be justified by appeal to these familiar relationship goods. It's just not the case that in order for a family to realize these intimate, loving, authoritative, affectionate, love-based relationships, you need to be able to send your child to an elite private school. So he added that we could prevent elite private schooling without any real hit to familiar relationships.
Oh my God, yeah, there it is.
Wait. So the one fucking thing my parents did right for me is evil now?
According to Dr. Smith, indeed. And of course, then he goes on to even suggest that it might be good to, abolish the family structure as a way to solve social justice issues, because we would level the playing field for everyone if no one had a family. Like, how, this is an Atlas Shrugged villain. Like, I don't know. The problem is not that he said these things, it's that someone employs him after he says these things.
Yeah, like, there's plenty of evil people out there saying bizarre, nightmarish things, but yeah, it's the sanction that is the real problem.
What is wrong with the University of Warwick in England? Fuck you, University of Warwick.
You just said in England.
It's true.
It's interesting to see how Europe is a few years ahead of us in all these respects. And by ahead, I mean behind, but, you know, ahead. And, you know, with some of these things, I'm sure it would be interesting to track the history of the development of these kind of ideas to see, like, how many years exactly England is ahead of us in terms of social corruption.
Well, England is the last empire before us that really, you know, sort of ruled the world. Mwahaha. So they kind of have the guilt that goes along with progressivism, and that's taken over their culture. So they're definitely a little bit of ahead of the curve in us that way, because when empires used to fall back in the day, they kind of, you know, fucking literally died and collapsed. But now they sort of just hang around and rape themselves.
Rape themselves with guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
This is horrific, right? I mean, the idea that now even reading to your kids unfairly disadvantages other people. I mean, does feeding your kids unfairly aren't we one step away from eugenics? Basically, like, if you are above this threshold financially, you can't have kids, and if you do, we must kill them. I mean, that's the next step here, isn't it?
I don't know if it's the next step.
To be fair, it's probably two or three steps down this horrible staircase of evil. But I understand your point, and the eugenics point is an interesting one. If anyone has read the book Merchants of Despair, which is actually like a history of the environmentalist movement, and the fact that the environmentalist movement is basically spawned out of the eugenics movement that was taken incredibly seriously all over the world and the United States until Hitler started implementing some of these things, and then we sort of all just like whistled, put our hands in our pockets, and walked our separate ways. But they didn't. But it's not like they magically disappeared, or that they just decided that their beliefs were wrong. They just applied them in a different way, used different language, did it under a different guise. And so I think that point is an interesting one. I think this is very simply this sort of you know, the fallacy of the economic pie, where it's like, oh, the 1%ers have 1% or like 99% of the wealth, and that it's a fixed amount of pie. They're taking that concept and now applying it to every single level of everything. So there's a fixed amount of education in the world, and people who are reading to their children are disadvantaging other children. It's like they're taking away their education, which is completely fucking stupid.
I mean, it's worse than that though, Daniel, because it doesn't even rely on that fallacy. I don't think, and correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but on the economic fallacy of the fixed pie actually has some level of plausibility to it. It's 100% wrong, but you can literally, a lot of times you can point to a case where it's like, okay, well, the CEO could be paying the employees more, but instead he runs the company such that he is paid more himself. And so it's, and like when you just look at that isolated situation, a lot of people are like, yeah, why doesn't he spread the wealth a little bit more? But in this situation, we have a situation where the parents are just choosing to fucking do their job. They're not taking away they're not actively reallocating their reading time away from other people's children towards their own. They're simply doing their goddamn job and thus raising their children above the level of children whose parents did not do their job. So he's not even relying on that. They're trying to float this trial balloon to just basically saying anytime you do something well, you're damaging people who are shitty, basically.
Well, that's why, I mean, the last part, so I agree with your first part, but the last part is why I think it's similar to the economic pie fallacy, which is basically by saying by doing this positive thing, you are having a negative effect on these people. So the fact that you have this amount of wealth disadvantages this other side who can't have this wealth. So that by the fact that you are reading to their children and they have this thing, these other children who are not being read to can't have that thing because they are right. being disadvantaged. It's yeah. turning a negative into a positive, which is a, and I don't mean that morally. I mean, anyway, argumentative wise, but
right.
regardless, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, and this is
bizarre because the only thing that's gained is the reading towards them, and anyone can read to their kids at night. I mean, even the fucking crack dealer, the pimp, anyone, you just like, hey, children, cuddle up next to the hose over here, and I'm going to read you all a story. Like, anybody, anybody can do that. So it's not like you reading, it's, that's like saying, you know, if you watch this DVD, nobody else can watch a DVD. It doesn't make logical sense.
You know what else doesn't make logical sense? Marrying yourself. But that's, literally does not make logical sense. But that is what 37-year-old Sophie Tanner has done in the UK. Yes, this could be called the What the Fuck is the UK Doing edition.
And you know what? I didn't have an edition name, so there we have it.
Well, let's make it pithier. But so
What the Fuck UK edition.
Put the little asterisk in it so we can get it past the censors. A bride has found the perfect solution to honoring the wedding vow, till death do us part, by tying the knot with herself. What a clever opening these journalists write nowadays. This is from the Mirror, by the way. Singleton Sophie Tanner, 37, from Brighton, has long fantasized of walking down the aisle with her dream husband. But after 20 years of searching for Mr. Wright, the digital consultant, decided to take her vows with the only person she knew could make the lifelong commitment. After buying herself a 40-pound ivory dress, Tanner finally took the plunge with herself.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. You may have said this and I may have just zoned out. How old is she?
I did say it. She is 37.
So she's counting the time she was in high school and college as part of searching for her husband? No wonder you weren't finding a fucking husband in high school. You go up to a guy and you're like, man, I'm so ready to get married. He's going to run in the fucking other direction.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Here's the thing. We look at some absurdities here in the Mid-Side, witness the farce and all, and this is certainly absurd, but it's absurd in a way that I'm perfectly okay with. And if you read the article, which we'll obviously post on themidside.com/podcast, I'm completely okay with it because she sort of understands that it's a joke. Like when you read the quotes from her, she's very clear that like, I know this isn't legally binding and I'm not advocating for this stuff. It's just something I wanted to do to be okay with myself.
Wait. This is a joke. So the money she spent on the dress is a joke. The money she spent on the ceremony, on the hall where she held it, or the location where she held it, is a joke. That's all a joke.
I mean, well, to be fair, she only spent 40 pounds on the dress. I mean, that's like not even that heavy. That's like 60 kilograms. It's like 30 kilograms.
Yeah, but what is that in real money? Is that like,
that's like, I don't know. It's 70 like bucks? I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like probably, I don't know, in dollars, you mean?
Yeah, I meant real money, right? Yeah,
I don't know, like $70,000 probably. Their money's like way better over there. But they got more money. That's why true. they print so much over there, like they're all rich. That's how England works, right?
Yeah, of course. You get part of that empire money. But look,
what about the time suck? Everybody had to go and watch her do this shit. Huh?
Right, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at this picture of her dad, like all these people who participated in this shit, like what were they thinking when they did this? Like, I mean, the thing is, when someone does this, I question the motives of stuff like this. Even if she's trying to be a little tongue-in-cheek about it, like people can be tongue-in-cheek in order to sort of cover up their motives. It's like, oh, I don't want to fully commit to this because I know it's absurd, but like, I still want to do it. I still want to inflict this upon other people. Kind of, remember the pussy bread story? Did you guys cover that? That was before my time. You don't remember
story.
The pussy bread story? Oh my God, this has to just be thrown in. There was this woman who, it was a feminist blog. I think it was called, like, The Angry Feminist or something. That was her blog's name.
Redundant.
Right, of course. And she made
aggressive.
She took yeast out of her pussy and made bread with, like, used that as the yeast for bread, and wrote a blog about it. And, like, in her blog, she's like, oh, I had this idea, and I thought it was kind of funny at first, but then I started getting really serious about it. But I still think it's kind of funny. Like, she tried to play it off as kind of tongue in cheek, but it's like, well, no, like, you are trying to do something very corrupt and, like attack sexuality on, like, the metaphysical level, but, like, and you're just kind of making these excuses about it, like, and, like, oh, it's just kind of a joke, it's just kind of funny. And I wouldn't claim that this woman is doing anything on that level, but it's, like, I'm suspicious, you know?
I'm maybe suspicious, but just reading the quotes from this article, it's basically just like having a party to sort of celebrate, like, being okay with yourself is how she made it out to be. She even says, what does she say? I haven't given up on love, and as my marriage wasn't legally binding, I will be able to marry someone else without committing bigamy. When I look back at my wedding photos, I remember just how liberated the whole day made me feel. I felt happy and felt strong in my own company. Well, it was sort of just about accepting yourself, and she did it in a bizarre, almost like a themed party kind of way. I mean, the preacher was her friend, and he dressed up like an archbishop.
Yeah, it's like a pretty funny picture.
At least she's lowering her expectations if she won't be committing bigamy.
Hilarious.
But no, I got a better one. James,
Only possible to be better, so.
James, I think the reason she hasn't been married is because she hasn't been tongue-in-cheek.
Oh. That is better.
Another,
not a lot better, but.
I told you. Well, that's why I said the first one.
Why did you have to direct that at me?
Because you said tongue-in-cheek like 5 times.
Oh, okay. I just figured any joke of that nature has to be directed at me because
all
of
my aggression is going towards you today, so right. Your girlfriend can feel it by proxy.
Right. Yeah. She's definitely feeling it right now. She's somehow sleeping through this, I think. No, she's not.
That's what she said?
She just looked at me angrily.
Wow, like, I'm just gonna, like, she's definitely feeling right now. Wait, no, she's sleeping through it. Oh no, she looked at me angrily.
I think I think that in some states that's rape.
Yeah.
What?
Just what you said. I mean, I don't even care
just
what you're doing.
Just
those words in that order constitute rape in Minnesota,
that
I'm pretty sure.
Like the act of rape. So
she's triggered. I mean, certainly on 60% of college campuses that would be rape. So apparently, you know what else is rape? Bernie Sanders' campaign. At least to the economy. At least according to Disney's Bob Iger. See what I did there? Master of transition.
Yeah, you took it one step at a time and it ended up working.
That's right.
Transition.
You gotta do. 6 degrees of separation between every concept and every other concept.
That's right. Disney CEO Bob Iger erupted in frustration against Bernie Sanders' attack on Disney's low wages and Iger's high salary, asking in a private Facebook post obtained by the rap, quote, "How many jobs have you created?" In a private Facebook message on Tuesday, Iger, a supporter of Sanders' Democratic presidential rival Hillary Clinton, so he can't be labeled with the big evil Republican moniker, wrote, quote, "To Bernie Sanders, we created 11,000 new jobs at Disneyland in the past decade, and our company has created 18,000 in the U.S. in the last 5 years. How many jobs have you created? What have you contributed to the U.S. economy?"
Mic drop.
Boom. Apparently that's a reaction to something Sanders said in a visit to Anaheim, where he said such wonderful things as, quote, "Anybody making a living wage working for Disney?" he asked. "It's an example of what we're talking about when we talk about a rigged economy. Disney pays its workers wages that are so low that many of them are forced to live in motels because they can't afford a decent place to live." He added, "People are asking, is it right that Disneyland, you have a CEO making $46 million when they're paying their workers starvation wages?"
All right, I'm going to pick out a minor point of what you just said Bernie Sanders said. So supposedly, they don't have a living wage, which means they have to live in motels. If it was cheaper to live in motels than to rent an apartment, Don't you think everybody would be living in motels? So maybe the reason people don't have a living wage is because they've got themselves in the cycle where they're perpetually paying too much for their housing by paying daily rates for motels.
There's something to that. Maybe not, I mean, this hotel specific point, clearly if they're living in motels, I'm not sure why that would be cheaper under any circumstance, but
there's no way it's cheaper unless you're the whore giving free handies to the manager.
Is that where that was going? All right. but there is something to be said about people in a low economic income bracket not educating themselves. Yes. Not educating themselves about the proper technique with the wrist. No.
Not educating themselves. Cars.
Yes, indeed. Not educating themselves about how to get out of that situation, how to save money, how to open a savings account, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And some of that's, you know, maybe we can blame on public schools, whatever. The point is, Sanders is an idiot, right? Because starvation wages? Seriously? I mean, I wish Elliot was here just to respond to this one story. I suspect we could get a little bit of an epic rant out of the guy, because he freaking loves his Disney. Let me be clear about that.
That you bring up a good point about the education level of someone in a situation like this, and how they wouldn't be able to get out of this situation. Because I've asked myself, okay, like, what would I do if I suddenly just had all my assets expropriated and then I was thrown out onto the street? And let's say, like, it was somewhere where, like, let's say it was somewhere, like, where I didn't have friends to rely on. And the thing is, like, I know how to find a shower somewhere. I know how I could find a decent looking suit for a job interview. Like, I know where I could, like, sleep for a few nights without getting to, so like, I've actually kind of thought about this, but then I'm like, okay, and then I could get some kind of job. Like, I can, you know, I know I could get some kind of job because all I have to do is just, you know, look nice and then work my way up. I go to extreme lengths of, you know, I'll do a lot of work to make sure, you know, wash my clothing in a river or something, you know, here's the thing is just like, and then I realize like, well, wait a second. Like, I have an education I have a certain level of education that comes from not having grown up in this piss poor sort of environment.
Yeah.
And what that makes me real, and then that leads to actually this earlier article, which is that at the end of the day, people are going to realize it's not money on its own that's the limiting factor here. It's not really money that's the limiting factor at all, because someone who's intelligent can work, is going to end up working their way out of poverty, just like, you know, Andrew Carnegie and thousands of others in the nation's history. Carnegie was an orphan, wasn't he?
Well, I don't know about Carnegie specifically, but you watch, like, there's a TV show about these robber baron types, quote unquote, they almost all came from poverty, or they almost all came from a situation that was horrible and worked their way out of it.
So yeah, they had a certain level of cleverness, and they were persistent, and they always were looking to learn something new, and they worked their way all the way up. But the thing, and so here's what's going to happen. They have to take that away from us. It's not enough to tell us, like, you didn't build. It's not going to be enough in the future to tell us you didn't build that. It's going to be you don't deserve the contents of your own mind. Your parents read to you when you're young. You were sent to an elite private school. You do not deserve the contents of your mind that have led to your good situation. Obama will literally point at your head and say you didn't build that. That's another place where we're going.
Well, that's interesting, James, because earlier in the first story, which you just connected back to, I was going to make a reference that I held back, and now I look like a genius for holding it back. What you're essentially referring to is Harrison Bergeron, except not of the physical body, where you're putting weights on people who are stronger to make them not as strong or not as fast or agile or whatever, but you're talking about Harrison Bergeron of the mind. Where it's like, we're going to inject a chemical in your brain to make you not think as much. Or, to sort of pivot on what you're saying, it's even deeper than just education. Adam Carolla talks about this, where he says there's an entire culture of people who are essentially psychologically damaged, who've been through trauma, and we're not addressing that. Well, it's basically going to be like, well, they are psychologically damaged and you're not in this way, so we're going to have to inject a chemical in your brain to make you psychologically damaged as well.
I don't think we're going to get to the chemical part, at least not in my lifetime, but
well,
the part we are going to get to.
The Harrison Bergeron thing.
Right, is certainly the guilt and the idea that we can somehow correct this with social policy. I forget exactly what I was going to say here, but because James just blew me away with that analysis. Well done. And then the Harrison Bergeron thing. What? What other podcast puts these things together? I don't know.
Balls.
So something I'll say though is I don't think, I think the Harrison Bergeron is definitely a very, you know, that's a story everyone needs to read in the modern day. But I don't think it's necessarily should be taken literally. I don't know if we're literally going to be seeing a situation like that. But I think what we're seeing here is a stack of rationalizations on top of one another for further expropriation of wealth. Once it becomes clear to people, and I think, you know, on some level it still is, that it's the mind that creates these values and not just, you know, oh, you just got lucky and happened to strike it rich, you know. No, there wasn't luck. Like, you thought of something amazing through persistence and learning and always trying to improve yourself. Like, that's why you figured out this amazing new way to do it, whatever it is. But if we can undermine the desert of your mind, do you deserve your mind? If we can undermine that, then we now have license to expropriate anything that was the product of your mind. I think that's what we're looking at here. I don't think we're going to literally have this happen, but it's one more justification to attack achievement.
And Bernie Sanders is quite good at that.
Yeah.
But speaking of attacks, not necessarily on achievement, but on women, Twitter abuse. 50% of misogynistic tweets come from women. That's according to a new study by a think tank named Demos out of the UK. And if anyone thinks that this is some conservative think tank, it's the research comes from some United Kingdom MPs who are from the Liberal Democrat Party. So anyway, over a 3-week period, Demos counted the number of uses of two particular words as indicators of misogyny. Now, you may think this is dumb, but this is what they did. These are their conclusions. It found evidence of large-scale misogyny with 6,500 users targeted by 10,000 abusive tweets, and they were using the words... I can't find them in the article. Do you know where they're...
Why are they using these words for misogyny? Like, they're... And how do you give a massage over the internet?
Is it a deep tissue misogyny? That's what I want to know. Or a Swedish misogyny?
Are we just doing the bit we did earlier today? Is this a callback to when the audience was not listening to us?
Yes. Yeah. And so we don't need to say that it was a callback, Justin. It's possible to prepare the joke ahead of time and then use it on the audience. The audience will not know that we've already had this conversation. It's okay to literally just repeat it for their benefit.
Just in case Justin is unaware, there are things we do in the world that our podcast audience is not privy to.
Thankfully.
Oh, I don't have that Periscope stream live constantly?
No, at least not when I'm around, I hope.
Oh.
Fired on multiple occasions is what that would be. So yes, we talked earlier about how misogyny could be. Anyway, okay. So it was, and it was
go on
the
with
use,
the story.
The study was the use of the word slut and whore, but not in. And they wrote some sort of algorithm. It's not sort of fully explained here, but they wrote some sort of algorithm that distinguished between what they called like the casual use or the friendly use of the word, like a friend to a friend being like, "Oh, shut up, you whore," versus someone calling someone a whore and meaning it. Now, I don't know how they broke that down. Maybe the study is dumb. We're reading this because...
What about the cunt word?
They did. How dare you, sir?
Are we allowed to say cunt on this show?
Are we allowed to say dot, dot, dot on this show?
So I'll allow it.
Especially a show about the UK. You realize that in the UK, that word's thrown around like the word bitch here. It's just like every other word there. I mean, really, it is. Yeah, we're the United States is the one who's really uptight about that word.
What
anyway,
the, hell,
the point of this, 50% of misogynistic tweets, meaning tweets that called someone a slut or a whore, came from women.
Now, maybe I didn't read this article very well, but like, they make no mention in this article of the significance of that fact, and yet the article is titled after that. Did I just not read this properly?
No. It's like, a horrible article.
Yeah, they just never acknowledge, like, wait, what does that mean that 50% of the abuse is of misogyny is coming from women?
Well, I think there's two ways you can look at this, right? So the first is you can look at it as surprising because we're led to believe that men commit misogyny. So it's sort of like, no, it's actually, you know, women are doing it just as much as men. Or the alternate social justice interpretation is these women have been so brainwashed by the patriarchy that they are misogynistic women. They are self-hating women. That is so dangerous. So you guys can decide out there in the audience which of those two perspectives I endorse and the mid-side endorses.
I think this is all funny because it comes out of a study that is trying to, or it comes out of a movement that is trying to, quote, reclaim the internet. There's even a hashtag, reclaim the internet, which is reclaiming it from misogynistic, hateful, racist, sexist attacks. And then the fact that 50% of the attacks are coming from women toward other women. It's like, what are we reclaiming? I don't understand.
And then,
which
and
I
then
never understood, because I always thought women were more hateful toward women than men were. And at least in terms of hurling language at them.
I don't understand this reclaiming the internet. Isn't the internet always been full of ignorant people?
They don't need to reclaim it. They have it. It is theirs.
Well, it's just like other ignorant people trying to steal the internet from other ignorant people. Like, I don't understand.
So there's definitely a deeper theme here that I focused my attention on, which is they talk a lot about abuse over the internet. And of course, you know, like, and Mackenzie was actually telling me when I was reading this that a lot of the abuse is, and I say, like, why don't you just fucking log off? And Mackenzie was saying to me, you know, a lot of these people killing themselves over this internet abuse, you know, they're kids, you know, they don't have experience.
That's an accurate statistic though.
Well, right. Yeah. That's okay. So she says she's correcting me here. She's saying like it is a statistic. And yeah.
No, I'm saying it isn't.
Oh, it isn't an accurate statistic?
I don't know.
Okay, that was her guess. That was her guess. Anyway, so, you know, it's supposed to kids.
I think her audio's as loud as mine is.
Maybe you should just turn your mic up all the way and then stand and then lay on a bed like 10 feet away from the mic.
That's far too sexy. The internet would break.
let's see. Like,
we're all waiting for the point.
Right. So, you know, she said a lot of these are kids. I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like, you know, they're inexperienced. They don't know how to handle this abuse. They don't know they can't reject their tormentors. They think their tormentors are right on some level. So they don't know how to deal with it. And that is, of course, tragic. And, you know, we should teach our kids to be nice to each other and stuff like this. But here's what I'm noticing. They're making this about Twitter. They're making this about social networks. They're saying these social networks need to somehow do something about this. This is something that, you know, we need to take government action, some sort of collective action against this. And of course we see, you know, this package dealing on the part of the left. They're always going to skew it in this direction in order to obtain more power. You know, imagine, you know, in the 20s when phones became regularly used everywhere. Probably not, probably later than that. I'm not exactly sure when, but imagine when phones were regularly used and people were talking to each other on the phones.
I'm just going to interrupt. Just have Mackenzie make up a statistic of when people started using phones a lot.
The Mackenzie, the manufacturer of statistics. we're always just pausing in the middle of my points. So I'm not gonna, after this point, I'm not gonna talk for like 15 minutes. How does that sound?
That's good, cause I have to do a review of X-Men Apocalypse, so.
Okay, perfect. So anyway, imagine talking about, you know, going to Packard Bell and saying, like, man, you guys really have to do something about, you know, teenagers talking to each other on the phone and, you know, saying mean things to each other. Like, that would have been laughed at a Dodge. Twitter has nothing to do with this. They're enabling a means of communication and nothing more. Like, they're not – nothing about how they're structurally setting this shit up has anything to do with the abuse that kids unfortunately hurl at each other.
Kids will hurl abuse at each other whether Twitter exists or not. I just want to remind people of this. It doesn't matter what the medium is. It doesn't matter if there is no medium other than face-to-face. Kids will be mean to each other. It is part of the growing up phase. And yes, we should teach our children to not be mean to each other. That doesn't mean they will stop being mean to each other.
Yeah.
It's just how it is.
By definition, there's always going to be a certain segment of the population that is immature, no matter how well you do it. There's always going to be kids who don't know what they're doing because they haven't grown up yet. By the time you educate one, another one's popped out. Now he doesn't know what he's doing.
That's right. Stop having children. That's the solution.
We just, again, got to killing kids. That's what I heard.
What?
Justin always just hears Holocaust.
Yep.
Is what Justin
hears. You're just reading into everything what you want to hear.
I just hear eugenics all the time. And speaking of eugenics and trying to build a master race, that happened in X-Men Apocalypse. I'm going to talk about it in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. So I'm going to start out with a quick review here because James does not want me to spoil this movie for him if it is good. So that should tell you my review of the movie. No. So this is how I would actually review X-Men Age of Apocalypse. I would give it a 7 out of 10. And I would say that this movie, interestingly, exists in the space between Civil War and Batman versus Superman. And what I mean by that is, it was like Batman versus Superman, where it was slower and it was more drama-focused, so they were really trying to build the conflict behind the action. It wasn't just like, we're going to have people punch people because one person feels guilt and the other person feels anger and love for his maybe homosexual lover, which we'll get to in a second. they built up. They started and they showed each of the characters. They introduced Scott Summers. They introduced Jean Grey. And they showed what their conflicts were and what they were dealing with. And, you know, it had some emotionalism and, you know, Magneto was emotionalist. But it also had legitimate drama in it. But on the other hand, it was Civil War because you kind of got to the end and the big fight and everything. It was just like, okay, people are kind of fighting now and they're not really doing anything. And people are just kind of standing there and, you know, the villain's not really, even though he's supposed to be Apocalypse, and he's supposed to be the most powerful mutant ever, and he's supposed to be threatening the entire world. It didn't really feel like a huge threat. And likewise, it was like Civil War because a lot of stuff wasn't really explained and just sort of seemed to work out. You know, I was trying to explain to Daniel earlier Apocalypse's power as we were driving in the car, and he was like, that doesn't make sense. How does that work? And I go, I don't know. They didn't explain it. We just sort of accepted it. And the other thing I will say about this movie positively is Bryan Singer, the director of, you know, all the X-Men movies except for First Class and, you know, the, like, Wolverine spinoffs or whatever. But Bryan Singer stepped up his game. I feel like he learned from Zack Snyder. How do I know this? You guys both saw Days of Future Past, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the big Quicksilver scene where they did the slow motion and he ran around and did stuff?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, there's another scene like that, except Bryan Singer set it to Sweet Dreams. So he did an action sequence set to a rock song. It was like watching a Snyder scene, especially because Sucker Punch had that song in it, if you remember.
I think once you're accused of rape, you kind of have to step up your game in Hollywood. Yeah.
So yeah, I would say I'm gonna take a bold stance here, and I'm gonna say it was the best X-Men movie. That's what I'm
better gonna. Than First Class.
Better than First Class. I think, James, that all the stuff you liked about Magneto, besides like the fact that he kind of just, like I said in the final fight, he kind of just stands there and, you know, doesn't do much. But beside that, his story was the most compelling. And fucking, there was one point where I was like, God damn, James. I was like, what's his first name? Fassbender? Michael Fassbender? I was like, God damn, Michael Fassbender is killing this right now. I understand why James really likes him. He was really good in the movie. His plot was compelling. And I fucking cried during one scene. I did. With him.
It's because you have a negative sense of life.
Yeah. No, it's because it was a sad fucking scene. That's why.
Oh, nope, that's appropriate. Sorry.
Yeah, I cried because the sad scene was sad. So,
I think sad it's the best scene is sad. Movie.
I would like to see, James, if you think it's the best X-Men movie. So go check it out and tell us what you think.
Okay, yeah, yeah. My expectations will be pretty high given how much I liked First Class, although I hated Days of Future Past because they made Magneto just a mercurial little bitch, basically. They just whoever wrote Magneto's parts, they just weren't thinking. They're just like, oh yeah, Magneto's the bad guy, right? I guess he'll, you know, do bad guy stuff, as opposed to him being a complex character who's, you know, like, I don't even know if he's the bad guy compared to Dr. X. I don't know. I like both Dr. X and Magneto. I can't make up my mind.
Professor X?
Professor X, not Dr. X.
Dr. X was this. I was like, Mega Man, Dr. X, Dr. Wily? Like, what's going on? Yeah. I mean, I think it's clearer in this movie. I wouldn't call Magneto the bad guy of this movie, but I think it's clear we're supposed to agree with Professor X. But in the way you're talking about, in many ways, this is more the sequel to First Class than Days of Future Past was. Because Days of Future Past got a little confused in the fact that they were trying to work in the newer people. You know, the older, or I should say the older people, the original people.
Mm-hmm. You know, the older, newer people.
Right, exactly. That's not confusing enough. What I'm referring to is like Patrick Stewart and all of those actors, the original actors from the trilogy.
The guys who are from the future, but, you know, in our past.
Future, yes, exactly.
Days, they're the days of, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I will say this, one final thought on the movie. I expected to go into the movie and complain that there wasn't enough Jubilee, but I think there was the right amount of Jubilee.
So no Jubilee?
Hey! No, there was Jubilee and there was talk of malls. And that's what, when you have Jubilee, you have to talk about the mall. So.
So exciting. Girl who shoots fireworks from her fingers. Yay. Don't bring her across Kentucky state line. You'll get arrested.
She's Asian. She shoots fireworks. Get it?
Jesus, no wonder you like her.
Jubilee!
Moving on.
So let's talk about some news here. The first news I want to talk about here is something I am very, very excited about, and I'm surprised this hasn't happened earlier. The Boxcar Children... It's going to be a series of family films. Yes, James? Did you have a question?
No, keep going. We'll see.
Raise your hand if you have a question.
Well, no, okay. I thought he had a question. I wanted to answer it. Go ahead. Ask the question.
Because Justin knows everything there is to know about boxcars and children.
Is this like, you know, one of those like Holocaust deals? It's like a story about...
Do you seriously not know what the Boxcar Children is?
No, I know what it is. I just thought I'd make a joke about the Holocaust.
No, that's a good joke. So that's a good joke.
But okay, no. Thank you.
Daniel, do you know what the Boxcar Children is?
It's children who are homeless and solve mysteries on a boxcar.
They were homeless. They're homeless in the first book because they're scared of their grandfather. So they
really?
Yes, so their parents...
Hold on, I seriously fucking made that up. Like, off the top of my head. I have no idea who the Boxcar Children are.
Wait, you didn't know they solve mysteries either?
They fucking solve mysteries?
Yes!
Like Scooby-Doo, but no dog.
Wait, I didn't know anything about that. I'm 100% serious, I've never heard of the fucking Boxcar Children.
Oh my god, that's exactly what it is. So in the first moment...
I could be a children's book writer. Anyone could be a fucking children's book writer. Make the kids homeless and solve mysteries.
In the first book, their parents die, and they're scared of their grandfather, so they go and live in a boxcar in the woods. then he finds them, and he takes the boxcar to their backyard, and he's this rich guy, and they go on adventures with him, and on all the adventures, it's every different adventure is them solving a mystery.
I'm awesome. That's what I got out of that.
So, Daniel's awesome, and this is going to be awesome, because I grew up, you know, on these. I stopped reading them, obviously, at a certain age, but I read all of these when I was young.
And you turned out like this? Not an endorsement. Not an endorsement.
Hey, my knowledge of story structure comes from the Boxcar Children.
Okay, all right. All right, that's where you're going with that. All right.
So I'm excited for this. I want to see what they do, and I'm excited to see the casting of this.
Hopefully your moral compass didn't come from the Boxcar Children.
How do you know about the morals of the Boxcar Children?
I have no idea. I'm just saying. Okay. I know yours. So.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. All right. Let's move on to a story that will make Elliot squee here. Disney is mulling a live-action version of The Little Mermaid. Are you buying or selling this?
Okay, I know I proclaimed last week that because of how well The Jungle Book was done, I would basically buy any live-action Disney thing. Probably except The Little Mermaid. How are they going to do that? It's going to have to be mostly animated, right?
Well, how the fuck are they going to do Aquaman, an entire Aquaman movie?
Well, and it's going to be boring. Man.
What, man?
Torso Man?
Yeah, because, you know, in Batman vs. Superman, they just had his torso attached to the wall. That was Torso Man, right?
Oh.
Hilarious.
Sorry, okay.
He's going to grow the rest of his body out and be Cyborg James.
Got it, okay.
Torso Man, Jesus fucking Christ. That sounds like a really bad Mega Man villain. That's the second Mega Man reference in this segment.
So, I don't know. Live action Little Mermaid. Wasn't the Little Mermaid movie already kind of the perfect Little Mermaid movie? I mean, it's not like my favorite movie ever, but for what it was, it's a good movie.
Yeah, but they're redoing Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, but I didn't really like Beauty and the Beast. So.
Oh. Are they doing it live action?
You don't listen to the show when you're not on, James?
I didn't hear that one. I actually do, but I didn't hear that one.
Was it on this show or pre-show where James said, I literally listen to every episode of this when I'm not on it?
That was the callback. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge of these is filming underwater, right? Do you just film on a giant green screen and say, don't worry about pretending to hold your breath, and then you just green screen in the... water and post?
Wait. Do mermaids have to hold their breath?
I don't know. Are they like
that would be a pain in the ass existence.
Do they have to come up for air occasionally? Like whales? I don't know how mermaids work.
They don't even have a blowhole, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, you ruined my joke. Well. I was going to say they have to come up every once in a while to drip out of their hole.
God.
Maybe
I don't know how this is going to work
on their back or something.
All right, so we'll see what they do with that.
If they can,
all right.
Pull
I'm
this
glad
off.
I'm glad that we took a discussion, a potential discussion of aesthetics, and we talked about blowholes, the particulars of blowholes for this.
Hand jobs and cars, James. Hand jobs and cars.
So here's the thing I'll say: if they can pull this off, I will never doubt anything they do ever again. That's what I'll say.
Well, I can think of something you would doubt. If they gave into the hashtag that's been trending recently, hashtag give Captain America a boyfriend, which of course, for the uninitiated, was born from the hashtag give Elsa a girlfriend, Elsa from Frozen.
Why are we obsessed with same-sex boyfriends and girlfriends?
Because they're trying to normalize it.
I think it's, I mean, I don't know about the word, using the word normal, but I would say that it's kind of perfectly accepted now, right? Like, at least in civilization. Like, maybe if you go out to, like, the redneck boonies of Louisiana, you might get some guy who says, well, you got a purty mouth. Wait. I think that went the opposite way of what I wanted. My point is, in most civilized areas of the country, no one gives a fuck if you're gay or a lesbian. It's completely fine. No one cares. So why are we trying to do this to children's art and to superheroes? Stop it. Hashtag go away. Hashtag get off my lawn.
I mean, here's the thing. At least with Frozen, doesn't it make a little bit of sense? I mean, Let It Go was about coming out of the closet, wasn't it?
No.
What? That's completely how I read that song. Like, I was like,
that's not what it's about. I've never seen the movie, and that's not what it's about.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I didn't see the movie. Then I saw that song, and I was like, oh, that's totally about her coming out of the closet. It's about her being comfortable with her sexuality for the first time. Then the prince in the fucking movie is evil, and it's basically about the love between her and her sister.
It's not about that.
So this is a callback to the porn episode edition of the Midside, where, you know, it's a lot of people wanting sister on sister action, sibling stuff.
I still maintain that Let It Go is about coming out of the closet.
It's not.
So they're making Captain America gay. They're making him a part of Hydra.
Okay. They're making him. Thanks for the transition there. Yes. What James is referring to is Marvel just did some sort of a reboot of their universe or something. I don't know what it's called. They do this all shit all the time in comics. But in it, they made Captain America, Steve Rogers, into Captain Hydra. So apparently this whole time, over his entire existence as a comic character, he's actually just been pretending to save people and pretending to be a good guy because he's really an agent of Hydra.
That is, I thought sort of Marvel in general had this horrible view of superheroes and values in general and like only sort of let goodness peek out from time to time. I am completely confirmed that at least the comic wing of Marvel absolutely hates values. They hate America. They hate anything good in the entire world. And I'm not even being over the top. Like, I mean exactly what I said. There could be no greater attack on all that is good in the world than to make Captain America an agent of the Nazi-esque regime of Hydra. That's fucking ridiculous.
James?
I mean, so I want to have Daniel's confidence. I agree with in my heart, I agree with everything you say there, Daniel, but I gotta just know more of the context of this. To be sure. But other than that, I'm in full agreement, at least in my feelings on this.
Well, Daniel, what you say is interesting to me because that was always my suspicion. Like, we're having this big thing right now in the, you know, with the fanboys in the media, like, Marvel is good and DC is bad and it's because of the Russo brothers that Marvel's awesome and it's because of Zack Snyder that DC is awful. But my suspicion is, and I'm not a comic reader, so I've been hoping, you know, some educated comic reader would like educate me, but they haven't yet. But my suspicion has always been what we're seeing in the movies is just a manifestation of these different companies' content and aesthetics. Just instead of in the comic book medium, it's in the movies.
They're connected. I mean, I don't think they're fully connected. Obviously, you know, who plays Captain America? What's his name?
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans was like floored by this Hydra revelation and was like, seriously, what the fuck? But there is some connection. It is influence and it is a certain aesthetic that they're trying to present. And maybe the directors are the ones who are giving that vision life, but I suspect that there is overall direction from the Marvel company. At least in some way.
Marvel has an overall vision and direction that's integrated?
No. I don't think it's integrated. I think it's very disintegrated, but I think there is direction. I don't mean that it's like a master plan that's integrated, but I believe that there is direction from the top, especially from the artistic department, to what the story should be like, what should be portrayed, what direction they're going with Captain America and Iron Man and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it's integrated at all, James. Don't get me wrong. It's horribly disintegrated, but that's part of, I think, what makes a lot of it very bad.
Is they have a lot of, yeah, from what I've heard, it seems like they got a lot of top down kind of bullshit going on where it's like, oh, we need to throw this in, we need to throw that in. You know, like I always talk about Thor screaming in the cave. Like from what I understand, that was the studio telling, Joss Whedon that they had to just put that scene in to establish something for a later movie. Like, they couldn't have just worked around that in a later movie. They could have, like, you know, and they just focused on making Age of Ultron good, which they failed at. I don't want to shit on Marvel here, but, like, yeah, I laugh because it's just so many of their movies have such brazenly stupid plots that make no fucking sense, and so it kills the drama.
Yeah. All well, right, this then. To me is just an egregious attack on values, so fuck you.
Yeah.
Marvel people. Exactly. Nonsense. All bitches. Right.
Are you ready to class this joint up now that we've lowered it down to the level of Marvel?
Yes.
Let's
please.
Talk about some Shakespeare. Elliot Ooh. Sent an article into our thread this week where he said it was somebody defending Hamlet because they're attacking it because people are attacking it for being misogynistic. They're claiming Hamlet is an abusive boyfriend of Ophelia.
Really?
That is what they're claiming. Now, I think the opposite is true. I think, and I've always thought, Hamlet demonstrates an anti-male perspective. And I'm going to read from the famous Get Thee to a Nunnery speech to prove my point.
Hmm.
Here we go. You can tell this is Shakespeare because, one, I'm going to butcher it, and two, it's not like anything I ever say. So, get thee to a nunnery. Why wouldst thou be a breeder of sinners? I am myself indifferent honest, but yet I could accuse me of such things that it were better my mother had not borne me. I am very proud, revengeful, ambitious, with more offenses at my beck than I have thoughts to put them in, imagination to give them shape, or time to act them in. What would such fellows as I do crawling between heaven and earth? We are errant knaves all. Believe none of us. Go thy ways to a nunnery. If thou dost marry, I'll give thee the plague for thy dowry. That's actually really funny.
That is funny.
Be thou as chaste as ice, as pure as snow, thou shalt not escape calumny. Get thee to a nunnery, go. Farewell. Or, if thou wilt needs marry, marry a fool, for wise men know well enough what monsters you make of them. To a nunnery go, and quickly, too. To me, he's telling her to go to a nunnery to get away from men because men are all evil and will treat her like shit.
Oh. Actually, yeah, okay, okay. And when I first read this, there's so many ways to look at this. It's so,
can we just,
it's so
I'm just
going
to copy that and play that all the time because that's the exact response I want to any argument I put forward. Just that noise and then, yeah, okay.
yeah. So, you know, my initial interpretation of this was, is like, it's not misogynistic. He's just fucking mad at Ophelia. Like, is it misogynistic to be mad at a woman? Especially when you're afraid of all your friends betraying you and killing you like they killed your father? Seems like he was under a lot of stress. I think I'll give him the pass on this one.
Indeed. I think Justin's point is good. James's point is good. All I have to say about the people who think this is misogynistic is methinks they doth protest too much.
Ooh.
But I like your point. Yeah, I did not read this the way you're saying it, but when I look back, yeah, he's clearly saying that. He's saying, I am myself indifferent honest, but I'm still a piece of shit, and then he goes through a bunch of reasons. And so he says, like, you know, we're all just errant knaves, right. So, you know, go to a nunnery, if you do marry, I'll give you the plague for your dowry.
Right, so he's giving her the gift of the plague. He's not like, I'm gonna fucking kill you for marrying someone else. He's like, no, the greatest gift I can give you is not to be married to the motherfucker you married.
That's, yeah, he has to have been saying that. So if you're chaste as ice, you shall not escape. Wait, but he says, be thou as chaste as night, as ice, thou shalt not escape calumny. What's calumny? Is that like cream you put on your skin? Like you sunburn?
I don't know. You want me to Google it? Let me Google it. Hold
better,
on.
I don't know what that is. Like, what are you not escape? That's an important word.
Let me get off
word,
Tinder and Google it. Hold on.
Yeah, Justin's just always looking for...
The making of false and defamatory statements in order to damage someone else's reputation. Slander. It's slander.
Okay, so you won't escape slander if you are
right. He's saying even if you're pure, even if you're moral, men will still call you a slut. That's what he's saying.
Oh, shit. Yeah, like...
He's really laying into men here. Yes, right. Absolutely.
And he's saying it's the pursuit of women that makes men this way. He said, wise men know well enough what monsters you make of them. So he's saying even the smartest man becomes a monster in the pursuit of sex. This is the view feminists have of
Yeah, you couldn't sex. Get a more feminist message than this.
Yes.
They should be praising Hamlet to the sky. Yes, they should say yes, this is what men are. Hamlet is just a hipster who's just so stressed out by his problems that he's just, you know, and he hates men. He's wearing skinny jeans and he can't make up his damn mind.
Right, and he's mad because he can't quite get his dad's inheritance and he's living off of it.
Again, not sure where else you're getting this kind of shit. What other podcasts? You have the woman wanting to lay herself and a fucking reinterpretation of Hamlet. So. Seriously.
Right, let's do the last
fuck you.
Here.
Fuck you, welcome to Night Vale. We're the welcome to podcast.
Yeah, fuck you, welcome to the beehive.
Exactly.
I am low. I don't know why you're going after the top one, man. Okay, so last news story here. A pair of glasses were, says the headline here, but I think it would be a pair of glasses was. But anyway, a pair of glasses were left on the floor at a museum and everyone mistook it for art. So basically what happened was some kids thought it would be funny if in a museum in San Francisco they left glasses on the ground and they did that and then people wouldn't touch it because they literally thought it was a work of art.
This is sort of the inverse story of, do you remember when the exhibit that was basically set up to look like a party was swept up by the maids at night? And like all the garbage was sorted into like recyclable bins and stuff.
I like it how we're able to like have callbacks on stories that are the opposite of the other. We got some like Hegelian dialectics going on here in our world of the mid-side.
This is just another example of how terrible modern art, quote unquote art, is. And you know what? I suspect that there will be some professor jumping out of his chair, proclaiming that this was art, even if it was meant as a joke. Like on some level, it is an artistic statement about the world and the what is that fucking term from grad school, Justin? The subversive /versive nature of constantly changing powers.
Yeah, that sounds like a Vitanza thing.
Yeah. So I suspect there are already professors trying to museums trying to buy this exhibit. That would be my guess.
What pissed me off is by the end of this article, the guy is sort of saying like, hey, if you think stuff like this is art, that's cool. I just thought this would be funny. Like, the guy had this brilliant joke, but then he undercuts himself by saying like, hey, but you know, stuff like this, you know, maybe it is art to some people. Oh my God, fuck you.
It's not art. It's not art.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you're going to do something funny like this, which I applaud him for doing, at least back it up with a statement. It's funny because of the fucking statement you could make with this. Like, it's not funny for any other reason. If you really did believe that shit like this is art, you wouldn't find this funny. You would just be, you'd just kind of, I don't know what you do. The most you could do is just kind of shut up and try to ignore it. Really, is if you really did strongly believe that this shit was art. I don't know what you could possibly say against this as a anti-bullshit art statement. But, yeah. He's, this is like the Republican of art critics. He makes a really good point and then he literally cuts the legs out from under his own argument. Only you can't do that because an argument doesn't literally have legs. You can't literally do that, but, you know, he's figuratively doing that.
All right.
Enough said.
Yeah, I think that sums up that. So let's move on to other people that love undercutting themselves. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way. EA, Glow, Steam, Rocks, Godress, Foam, Firefox. These things are all on Reddit.
mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. What fictional characters are actually suffering from severe mental health problems? Well, this is a follow-up. I include this as a follow-up because we've already established that is everyone in Civil War.
Right. I don't know if they're, I don't know if you'd call them severe mental health problems, but I would call them just like the normal health problems of never identifying your premises and just always acting on emotion without any consultation of logic whatsoever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you may be a little bit mad about this, Justin, but the again, this is not an example of severe mental health problems, but Batman in Batman versus Superman comes to mind.
He's
clearly
supposed to be.
Well, right. Right. And I mean this in a very serious way. Okay. So you agree with me. Like, yeah, that's what I drew from it is that like, yeah, he's supposed to be disturbed. He's supposed to be pretty disturbed. And you know, like he's having these dreams about, you know, these apocalyptic visions and then these fucking bat people are descending from the sky all the fucking time. You know, very, very afraid all the time. And so, you know, I watched the movie a second time. And it made way, I think the movie is kind of cut to the bone so, you already said this, but like I agree with you now. The movie's cut to the bone so badly that it made a lot more sense to me the second time. I enjoyed it much more the second time. For me, it's bumped up to an 8. Now this second time where for me 5 is average. So like that's a very high review for me. You know, even the Martha scene, which I really didn't like the first time around, the Martha scene made more sense to me this time because it's like, okay, like we're dealing with someone who's kind of acting on his traumas. He's kind of a slave to his emotional, to some degree. He's still rational and, you know, and he ends up, defeating his demons to some degree when he snaps out of it and realizes like, this is a man just like me. And so even the Martha part made more sense to me this time. Once I just felt the greater context of every scene, which I couldn't do the first time around because it wasn't very well cut.
To drive home your point, thematically, that's sort of the point, is that the people who attack the good and attack heroes and the heroic are people who have psychological damage on their own because the reflection of Bruce Wayne is, of course, Lex Luthor. And, you know, they talk about and they show Jesse Eisenberg's psychological damage, especially when he talks about and insinuates his father beat him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like how at the midside here we can turn every discussion into something about Batman versus Superman.
It'll come back in the Zack Snyder movie eventually.
Justin, I'm sure you've noticed this, but I don't think we've discussed this on the midside, but Batman's dream, or rather Bruce Wayne's dream sequence in the part where he's in the desert, mm-hmm. And then he wakes up from the dream into a second dream. We got a little Inception shit going on. Mm-hmm. When he wakes into the second dream, that's gotta be, that's gotta be a message from the future, right? Like someone's yelling at him.
That's
like,
the Flash.
It's all
the Flash
about
can time travel.
Oh yeah, that was the fucking Flash. Okay, yeah, when I first saw the movie, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Why is this man screaming? Like, I just like, that
made no
sense. I
think that's most people's reaction to the movie.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm wondering, is the desert scene, is that something that actually is gonna end up happening too? I kinda wonder about that too.
Well, that's the whole thing, is in that movie, or in that sequence, Superman has become the slave, sort of the villain who, I can't remember his name, Daniel. The ultimate apocalypse, the guy who comes from Apocalypse in DC. It's because I don't read comics.
What?
The equivalent of Thanos.
Oh, Darkseid.
Yeah, Darkseid. Darkseid has apparently...
It took me a minute to figure out what you were asking.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's okay. Darkseid has apparently taken over the Earth and enlisted Superman in his, you know, takeover scheme. And part of the theory is that he's going to raise Superman's dead body in Justice League 1 or 2.
Oh, that's badass.
And that's part of why he said this is something else that works well thematically that people don't realize. That's why Flash says Lois Lane is the key. Because in this movie, Superman realized Lois Lane is the key to his values. And then that's going to carry further thematically into Justice League where Lois Lane, presumably in that situation, would be the key to regaining Clark's humanity and having him not be evil anymore. Reminding him of the love of a woman, which that spans through Snyder's movies, the importance of love of women.
Oh my God. This revelation is like reading Ayn Rand all over again. It all makes sense now. It's just this amazing load blowing of knowledge right now.
But don't blow your crow. That's the bad blow.
Right.
I only have one thing to say, which is, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Psychologically damaged character or severe mental illness.
We are doing it. Reddit on Reddit, right?
Yes, that's correct.
This wasn't the last segment 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago?
No.
Oh, okay. Exactly.
I mean, aren't they
all... Can we all do SpongeBob laugh? Ready?
No!
I can't do it.
No!
I have a
follow-up question, Daniel. Aren't they all severely mental health problems on that show? I mean, isn't Patrick Starr retarded?
Yeah, he is mentally deficient. SpongeBob is on the spectrum. Somewhere. Squidward.
A narcissist.
Narcissist, absolutely. And, nothing wrong with Mr. Krabs. He's perfect. He's pretty much he's the moral compass of that show.
And what's
the ideal crab?
The ideal crab. Yes, absolutely.
And what about Sandy?
Oh, Sandy's, she's an infomaniac. Okay, moving on.
Next Reddit. So for this next Reddit, I want to read a post from, this is from the 2X Chromosomes subreddit. And this is called Trying to Understand Transgendered Women. So, Trying to Understand Transgendered Women by Sort of Like on Reddit. I experienced something that took a toll on my typically, quote, progressive and accepting psyche. And I apologize in advance for the scientific sounding language. I'm just trying to describe the situation as best as I can. I'm a server, and a male and female sat down in my section. The female had bright red hair, and the male had a beard. The female used feminine pronouns to refer to the male, and it completely took me aback. And I had a feeling that they had anticipated a shocked response, as if the female wanted to be clear what her friend wanted to be called. It wasn't something that nagged at me for the rest of their visit. I just avoided using pronouns so I didn't slip up. I didn't think much about it, though. My typical, it's your life as long as you're nice response kicked in. But I can't help but to think about the initial exchange. How uncomfortable I felt when someone who very obviously was a male wanted to be called a she. I didn't understand why that would shock me when I've hung out with drag queens and attended LGBT events. It wasn't for lack of being exposed to people with gender identities outside of the mainstream. I have been, but it could be at those events I knew who would be there, and people typically dressed in culturally defined gendered clothes. This was just an average day at work with someone who looked like an average dude. So, I wrote at all this to say, I truly can't comprehend the struggle one has when it comes to gender identity. I thought I did, but my experience showed me that I really didn't. I want to understand your experience and perspective. I want your stories, and I want to put to rest the men are this way and women are this way narrative that seems to still be lodged in my psyche. Forgive me for sounding ignorant in any way, but it's that ignorance I'm trying to get rid of. And I want to say before you guys have open season on this, this is framed in a very religious way. The way this ends, forgive me for sounding ignorant in any way, but it's that ignorance I'm trying to get rid of. That's like, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Please cleanse me of my sins.
Yeah, there's no other way it could be framed, because it's completely disconnected from reality. So, you're being confused by the fact that a man wants to be called a woman, and you think that's wrong to be confused? Like, no. You realize that the person who is confused is the man who wants to be called a woman. That's the person who's confused, who actually
needs help. Yeah, you're literally trying to smash the square, the round peg of your mind into the square hole of non-reality.
Yes, absolutely. Of course you are confused. It is okay to be confused. It's because you want to tell them you're the confused one.
Yeah, because they're fucking
confused.
They're
asking you to take their confusion on, basically. You're allowing their confusion to affect your psychology. They want you to do the, I mean, that's the second-handed nature of this. They want you to do the heavy lifting for them. They want you to bear the psychological responsibility of figuring it out.
Imagine, you know, she works in a, they're a server, this person, works in a restaurant. If the chef, when you put up an order for a sandwich, puts a light bulb on the plate and says, order up. And you say, but wait, this is a light bulb. And like, no. This identifies as a sandwich. Serve this to the customer. And if you don't call it a sandwich, if you don't call it a sandwich and have them eat it, you're a fucking terrible person and you're immoral.
Or even better, if you put up, you order a sandwich and he puts up a panini and you say, what's going on? He goes, well, that's a sandwich. That's what I call a sandwich. And you're like, no, it's a fucking panini. They ordered a sandwich. He goes, that's what I call a sandwich. So now you have to bear the responsibility of dealing with reality and dealing with the reaction because the cook calls the panini a sandwich a panini.
I like my light bulb, but yes.
I was just making it more. No, yours is funnier. I was just making it more applicable.
Don't do that.
don't do that.
James, do you have anything to say about this?
I mean, you know, I wasn't exactly sure why you posted this, but I like the point you're making here about the, you know, the person with the confusion trying to get other people to do the heavy lifting for them. I mean, I'm sure not all people with this mental disorder have second-handedness in addition to the mental disorder, but that I could see that as being a means of sustaining the delusion.
Well, there's another element here too that, you know, we haven't talked about. There's no evidence that the people who sat down were actually second-handed or not. There's a lot of projection going on the person who wrote this. The person mm-hmm. who wrote this is the second-handed one, where he or she, and I'm assuming it's a woman who wrote this because it's the 2X chromosome subreddit, but she is taking on, for some reason, she has decided to psychologically take on this conflict of this man. And by the way, I want to make the point, we have no evidence that they weren't just fucking with her. Like,
right.
Let's go into the restaurant and I'm just going to call you she the whole time.
I have to do this. We got to, like, next time, dude, at the counter this morning, you know, me, you, Dan, and Mackenzie, we should have sat down, made sure to refer to the three of us as she's and then Mackenzie as a he, and see what that waitress would have done.
That waitress would have actually had to have been at the table and talked to us for that to have worked.
Yeah, exactly. Experiment, well taken, though. Yeah. We absolutely should do that. That's fun.
But you see what I'm saying? That there's projection here on the part of the author of this post, and she's the second-handed one?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Last Reddit. What are you tired of arguing or trying to prove?
That Justin is funny? I don't.
Jesus fucking Christ. Fuck you.
Open aggression on the midside. You know, I don't know if I ever get tired of arguing. I love arguing. I love trying to shit.
I mean, I do get tired of arguing some things. And it's not, so there, I think there's a distinction between something you're tired of arguing and something you're tired of trying to, maybe not. My point is there are arguments that I'm tired of having that I still will have because they're incredibly important, and arguments I'm tired of having because they come up so fucking often and are not important whatsoever. So one of those that has come up lately because I have added a vegan to my friendship circle is whether or not veganism is healthy and good for you, whether or not you should be a vegan. I'm already tired of having this argument, and I don't fucking care anymore. I just don't care, which maybe is the vegan strategy. Maybe that's their entire thing is we're just going to argue this point over and over again until people just say, fuck it, let's all be vegan so we can stop having this goddamn conversation. But there are arguments, like, basic things like, you know, like broken window fallacy kind of things, like we can spend our way out of recession or whatever. I'm tired of having those arguments because I think they're very clearly wrong, and anyone with any basic understanding of economics could figure out that they're wrong. But I'm going to continue to have them because they're incredibly important.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't come up with a topic for this one because I can't think of anything I'm tired of. I could totally understand this position where you're tired of proving, like what you said, Daniel, like, you know, arguing against people who make the broken window fallacy. Oh my God. That's, you know, there's two types of people who fall for the broken window fallacy. There's people who don't know economics, and that's just want of education. You just explain it to them. And then there's, you know, bad economists who are deliberately trying to deceive people. And here's the thing. You don't argue with the latter. You don't argue with people who are intellectually dishonest, because that's itself sanctioning them by pretending that they are somehow engaging in intellectual discussion. So I find that I don't really find myself tired of trying to prove anything. It's just at some point I just find myself realizing, like, oh, I can't educate this person because I can tell they hold a position where they don't want to know the truth. Examples of this would be any philosopher who believes that knowledge is impossible. Any political scientist who believes in communism still, you know, economists who believe in the broken window fallacy, and the list goes on and on. But these are examples where it's just like, no, in your position, you have no excuse for ignorance on this issue. And so we simply do not need to talk to you. We will argue against you for the benefit of others listening, perhaps, but not to try and change your mind.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
That's what you just said, is the difference between tired of arguing something and tired of trying to prove something. And the example I have with that is, I'm just tired of trying to prove, like, Zack Snyder knows what he's doing and is intelligent. And what I mean by that is, I will argue all day that his is better, you know, what he does is better than what other people do. And that's an argument worth having. Because it's really, you know, in the layman's term, that's a discussion. And I'm willing to, you know, say that and say, hey, you know, these people make different kinds of art. They both know what they're doing. They're both, you know, craftsmen. Let's discuss the pros and cons of their crafts. But if you can't even get on the same page and it's just that he's a hack, he sucks, he's awful, it's just that's what I'm tired of things discussed like that. You know, the way it manifests in, like, football is, you know, oh, well, Belichick's not that good, or Brady's not that good, he's not that talented. Rather than talking about what these people are actually doing and what makes them successful and how it actually lines up.
Yeah. I mean, I think in situations like that, Justin, you're dealing with maybe not intellectual dishonesty, as is the case in these academics I'm talking about, but you're dealing with someone who's speaking with a secondary motive. You know, the most innocent of which I can think of is you're not a Patriots fan. You're, you know, a Lakers fan instead. And, you know, and the Patriots beat the Lakers. I know that was, I did that on purpose just to, you know, the joke about my being ignorant of sports. But, like, you know, they're a fan of some team that's a rival of the Patriots. And so they're just looking for any old way to attack, you know, Tom Brady. And so they'll do that, and they're not actually making any kind of truth statement. They want to say something mean about Tom Brady, basically. And that's bad, but a little more innocent. But then once you get into the Zack Snyder category, you talk a lot of the time, Zack Snyder challenges us to be more. He's, you know, he's romantic. And so a lot of people are uncomfortable with, you know, being challenged, being told to, you know, make more out of their lives. And so they'll lash out at him for any old reason they can think of. So I don't think it makes sense to try to prove this to those people. You can re-educate people who have been told that he is a mindless visualist.
I don't know
what to make of people who think he's a nihilist. They're just not watching the movies. They're just, like, looking at pictures and saying, hey, it's dark and, you know. Though they're getting nihilist mixed up with tragic sense of life. But I know that's a whole discussion there. But I think, I don't think you need to be proving it to people who are not really being intellectually honest on this topic. They just want to attack Zack Snyder for some reason, so they're going to think of anything that they could possibly think of in order to do that. See, they don't need re-educating. They don't need proving. You just ignore them. You don't engage in a discussion. They can't, I mean, they need it, but they're not going to be able to receive it.
So I should shut down the camps I'm building, the re-education camps?
Right, I did make that sound super totalitarian.
All Zack right. Snyder re-education camp would be the best re-education
camp. I'm just going to play the same 7 movies over and over.
He makes you fight in slow-mo, and everything you do has to be set to music at the camp.
He makes you shower, but really slowly and with some hot chick.
Sign me up.
Okay. Sign me up. Yeah.
All right. Let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
Well, I learned that I could be a children's novels author because fucking Boxcar Children are homeless and solve mysteries. So.
James?
Entire premise just from the story. I learned that Hamlet was a man-hating hipster.
It's very true.
Absolutely. Justin, what did you learn?
I'm going to be narcissistic, and I learned that I am apparently always aggressive.
Narcissistic funny that, aggressive complex.
Funny that you're learning this just now. You are from Boston, you remember. Like, you did grow up there,
it's
right?
It's not fucking aggressive to me. Get the fuck back. Back off, dude. It's not fucking aggressive.
Park your car in the yard.
Chill the fuck out.
You fucking
out.
Wicked
get
dumb.
Get the fuck off my grass, bro.
Yes. Indeed. If you want to get off our grass, bro, why don't you visit themidside.com/podcast? If you don't know what that means, you should also visit twitter.com/themidside and tweet at us and ask what the hell that means, because not even I know. But seriously, if you did learn something this week, give us a little shout out somewhere on one of the social medias, one of the networks owned by some 1% or billionaire, or especially on iTunes. In iTunes, you can give us a little shout out, and then there are these stars, and they form a constellation of a line when you fill out all 5 of them. It's glorious. It's like Orion's belt. And you put 5 of those in, and then you type in a comment, something to the effect of, this has changed my life. I'm not sure how I lived before the Midside. I mean, you can play with that, but that's a good starter sentence
for you. That's your form paragraph right there. You can add or detract where necessary.
Right. And then you click submit, and then you run immediately to the nearest human being, and with every bit of soul, you tell that person that this is the thing that is missing from their life. Don't look for God. Don't look for Allah, please. Please, God, don't look for Allah. Look for the Midside in your life today. Tell a friend. That really helps. Tell coworkers. That kind of helps. Tell enemies. That doesn't really help, but it will piss them off, which we also approve of. And then, of course, Patreon.com/TheMidside.
Oh, Patreon.
Oh, Patreon. Our Patreon subscribers are unbelievable. We're up to like $19 an episode now, which is like, I don't know, it's money.
I would like to thank them for supporting my dream of going to Vegas and getting a hooker.
Exactly. Support the dream, people. Seriously, Patreon money, thank you so much for the subscribers. You can choose. You can go to patreon.com/TheMidside, and you can choose to give us money for every piece of content that we create. As little as you want, as much as you want, and it helps us. James, what does it help us do?
Keep the lights on!
That's right. We fucking love lights. We did say Vegas, right? Who said Vegas? Justin said Vegas. We love lights. And we love lamps.
Lights.
How did
we're
you
banging
know the name
hookers?
Of the hooker I'm going to go for in Vegas is lights?
Lights out, baby. Yeah. So,
That's right, thanks, dude.
Thanks so much. And we look forward to speaking with you again on the next trips.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Johnny Dupin, all the way in blue, Team Rock, the Firefox.
I suspect that's mocking the theme music, which I've never heard.
Yes. You've never heard it?
I don't listen to the podcast.
Are you kidding me?
I've never listened to the podcast.
Is it like a Johnny Depp sort of don't want to hear your own performance sort of a deal?
Jesse Eisenberg, you mean?
Johnny Depp does it too, is what I heard.
Yeah, but Johnny Depp beats women now, so we don't talk about him.